Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near. Between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sound's the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep. And miles to go before I sleep.
Who among us hasn't stopped what we're doing if just for a moment as a flock of Canadian geese flies overhead, the distinctive V flight pattern, the loud honking alerting us to their presence? Who among us hasn't seen a doe at the edge of a wood in early summer and our eyes widen as we catch a glimpse of a pair of spotted fawns? Who among us has watched an eagle soar, a tom turkey strut, heard a blue jay screech, or paused at the sound of a hoot owl? Who among us has spent countless hours on a crisp fall morning sitting in a stand hoping for just a glimpse of that buck? The cackle of a rooster pheasant as he's flushed from his hiding spot by your faithful four-legged friend. Ducks and geese streaming through the flyway, announcing themselves in the pre-dawn darkness. Perhaps you've stood breathless atop a mountain ridge, peering across the valley for a majestic bull elk. And who hasn't heard the call of the red-winged blackbird, his incessant calls for his female companion? And finally, at the end of the perfect day, with friends gathered around a lakeside campfire, the mournful cry of a loon calls out across the still waters. These moments come and go in an instant, but nationally recognized wildlife artist Scott Storm can sit in front of a fresh canvas in his studio and bring those moments back to life, realistically capturing the memories for all to enjoy. I recently sat down with Scott in his home studio, overlooking a small pond at the base of a hill, to discuss wildlife art. You are there, sports, Rick Grabbit, and I'm visiting with Scott Storm, wildlife artist, and from the Holding Ford area, Freeport, St. Rosa area, so a local guy that has gone relatively big-time national with his work. And I'm in his studio here, and we're discussing wildlife art here. Well, Scott, some of man's earliest form of communication identified in those early cave drawing are paintings found in caves in France, and what, 17,000 years old? That really, is it an accurate statement to say that wildlife art really does go back that far?
Oh, definitely. It certainly seems to have started in a cave, and you're visiting my cave today.
And what a cave it is. How early in life did you recognize yourself that within yourself that you had a love for art?
Well, I think it was after I got out of college. I went to school for architecture, and my wife was still going to school at St. Cloud State, and I just kind of picked it up in the evenings as a hobby and started entering duck and pheasant stamp competitions around the country and had some luck right away. And it kind of, the competitive attitude that I have kind of spurred that on and made me want to try to succeed at it.
Self-taught artist, training, what's your background there?
I'm self-taught. I have taken some workshops with some very well-known artists, but for the most part, a lot of it stems also from the study of architecture. A lot of them have a kind of a parallel path, so to speak, in the concept of design, I guess. But
do you hang on to some of your earliest efforts and kind of pull those out and look back and say, this is kind of where I started, this is my art heritage?
No, I kind of hide those in the closet. I don't pull those out because there's a lot of mistakes, but I still make a lot of mistakes, but you learn from it and kind of move on. But seriously, I still do have some earlier stuff, but I don't get them out very often.
When you were first starting out, you know, what technique did you find was maybe the most difficult for you to master? What was really the thing that kind of held you up a little bit?
Well, I work in acrylic paint, and I think acrylics is very hard. It's a water-based paint, and it dries very fast. And when it dries, it actually changes color, so to speak. It's not as crisp. And so when you sit back down and try to capture that same color, it's always a game to try to get it. So in the early days, when I would sit down whenever I had time, an hour here, hour there, it drove me nuts because I'd end up having to repaint a lot of it to try to get things to match.
So you had to almost be thinking ahead to what you wanted it to come out and kind of formulate in your mind what the right mixture of acrylics?
Right, yeah, and it was a combination of not only that paint but the right brushes. I mean, I was going to the store and just buying the primary colors, and that's not actually how I paint anymore. It's almost it's hard to describe, but it's a combination of a lot of things that occurred.
Let's talk about the process that you go through. Let's start with subject matter. How do you choose? Okay, I want to do this painting. What's the subject that you pick, or how do you pick that?
Well, I do a lot of hunting and fishing, but then I take my camera a lot nowadays, and it might be something that grabs you. You know, for instance, a sunset, and you might say, "Well, that would be really cool if I had a flock of canvas backs coming through that." Or it might be I've picked up photos that I've taken over 20 years ago, and in fact, I just did it last week. I painted a dog swimming in the water that I took the picture for 20 years ago, and it just all of a sudden something clicked, mm-hmm. and you know, I saw something and how to manipulate that a little bit more to make it look better, or you know, things like that.
Would you, not to pigeonhole yourself, but would you characterize yourself as a waterfowl artist, or do you have a specialty?
I think over the years, because of the success I've had in, say, duck stamps, and I do a lot of work with Ducks Unlimited, people know me as a waterfowl artist, but I do, and I still probably do about 75% of my paintings are waterfowl, but I do everything from tigers to butterflies, it's just if I'm painting something for myself that kind of gets me going, it really runs the full gamut of species.
You mentioned acrylics. Is that always your medium? Do you dabble in other, you know, I want to do watercolors today, or I want to do oils, or?
Yeah, when I was younger, in high school, I would say I used watercolor, but I painted them not in a watercolor fashion. Mm-hmm. I painted them more rigid. I'm a realistic artist, and mm-hmm. that's kind of how I like to go about things. And I did comic book heroes back then.
Oh.
And then when I started getting into acrylics, I also thought, well, I'm going to teach myself some of the other things too, like the oils. Mm-hmm. And I went out and bought all the oil paints and everything. I never even popped the tubes on them because it got to a point where I was starting to figure out how to deal with the acrylics. And why change it? You know, at that point when you're starting to understand it, because it took me, I'm talking about 10, 15 years that this mm-hmm. took
to get
to that point. Yeah, so.
Is the subject matter in your mind's eye? You mentioned that you pull out photographs. I mean, is that how you work off? Is that your main point of reference when you're painting? Is you have a photograph, or is it something up here in your head that, you know, you have that vision inside?
I do both. I can paint off the top of my head, and I have many paintings. I go a little bit more off of photos nowadays, at least for the backdrops, because predominantly 80% of what I'm doing are paintings for people. And, for instance, they might want their family farm painted in there, and they want to get things correct, and I want to get them correct for them. So I use the camera a lot just to try to capture those things.
In my living room at home, I think art, the purpose of art, and I don't know, maybe you agree, maybe you don't, maybe this is too simple, but it is to evoke some kind of emotional response from somebody. And in my living room, when I was growing up in South, and we'd go visit the grandparents and where my parents grew up in southeastern North Dakota, it was your typical North Dakota farmhouse, shelter belt farm, and out behind the shelter belt there was old combines and old broken down Model T cars and such, and you'd see a pheasant or a jackrabbit, and just one day I happened upon there's a print, and I mean, you talk about capturing, it wasn't my grandparents' farm, but that's exactly, you know, the background that it was. There's the combine, there's the old broken down rusted out car with a pheasant on the hood.
Right, right. And the best compliment I can get is when somebody comes up to me and will talk about a painting and they say, you know, I've been there. That's my hunting spot. Mm-hmm, or, mm-hmm. And, you know, those are the cool things. And that to me tells me that I was successful on that one when it appeals to somebody.
Right. And I call my company You Are There Sports, hoping to draw my listeners into the fact that they're at a ball game when they can't be there. And I would imagine the same thing, like you just mentioned, is with your art, capturing that moment, that scene.
Oh, definitely. You know, artwork is definitely something that's got to pull on the heartstrings.
It's not as simple as saying, I want to paint a duck. You have to know the breed of the duck. You know, you have to know the physiology of the duck, the shape of the bill, the coloration, you know, the feather patterning, you know, everything that goes into making a duck a duck. There's got to be a tremendous amount of research done.
There is, and that's part of the fun. With realism, I really want to know what I'm painting, you know, and there's so many times, you know, I don't want to be in a situation where somebody looks at it and thinks to themselves, well, the eyes aren't right. Mm-hmm, they're too far back or they're too forward. So that to me is very, very important. And as an example, I've got a good buddy of mine who's a professional wildlife photographer, and we take a couple trips out to South Dakota. And we'll, people that pass us by probably think we're crazy because we'll be sitting in these sloughs all day long with our cameras, you know, with mud and muck up to our chest, yeah, and taking photos. And we're having a great time because it's an opportunity to study the birds and as well as take photos.
So once you've decided on a subject, let's say it's a wood duck or a canvas back, is the next decision you need to make, what setting do I put this subject in?
Yeah, sometimes it depends. Sometimes I'll come up with a landscape sort of thing and then try to figure out what to put in. Sometimes it's a real neat pose of a white-tailed deer, you know, and you try to imagine what kind of setting do you want to see that in. So it's kind of a push and pull. It really depends.
As I look around your studio here, and it kind of answers my next question, but I'll ask it anyway. Are all your paintings done on the same size canvas? Obviously, it's a no answer, but what makes that determination?
Good question. I guess I've never really thought about that other than, you know, sometimes I'll have customers that will want something to fit in a certain place. Yeah, and sometimes it's just kind of a, if it's a real simple painting, something that's, say, just a duck, it really doesn't lend itself, if it's a duck sitting in the water, it doesn't lend itself to a big painting, so it might be something that fits better in a 10 by 7 size format.
Whereas on the wall of your studio there, you have the brown bear with the salmon, which the nuance is a massive creature, lends itself to being a large painting.
Oh yeah, that just wouldn't be the same thing because I did paint it sort of life size and kind of in on the teeth and the eyes and the salmon, and just wouldn't look correct if I painted a six inch by 10 inch. So.
Right. Are your painting sessions long sessions? Are they kind of when inspiration hits you? You know, is there a time of day like I'm going to work from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. boom, straight on without a break? Or what's your process as far as time working on an artwork?
Oh, it's all over the board. It depends on the deadlines. The time I spend, I'm a full time artist, but the time I spend painting is about 30% of the time. The rest of it's is business as usual. It's the phone calls. It's doing shows. It's doing research, writing letters, all that kind of stuff. But when I do paint, it can be. I can paint all day long. I usually get up 5:30 in the morning, and I can go till 10, 11 at night if I need to or if I feel inspired. But a lot of times things get broke up, and I'm happy if I can get say 4 or 5 hours in a day is kind of an average, I would say.
Talk about, does it take a lot of discipline? You mentioned you could paint all day. Obviously, you're able to sit there and concentrate for that long time. But talk about the discipline of working on a project.
Well, I think when I do start, I like to sit down and work out. Say if it's a big landscape, I want to get in there and work on the sky and get that right, or the sunset, get all that done. Sometimes it does get hard mm-hmm. to focus because I've got one window that looks out over onto a pond, another window that looks out over to a field, and I've got a pheasant feeder there. So when the animals are around, it gets a little tough.
Start to finish, on average, how long does it take you to put a project to bed, so to speak?
Oh, a large painting. When I say large painting, it's probably about a 20 by 30 inch painting. It's about a 2.5 week painting process once everything's designed. Sometimes, we kind of talked about this before, I can sit down and just start painting without designing. I've got a pretty good idea in my head. Other times, I'll sit down and I might do drawings and work on the computer to put things together. It might take me more time than it actually does painting. So, again, the painting part is pretty accurate on the time. I can pretty much guess, but the design time always is up in the air.
We're visiting with Scott Storm, wildlife artist, here in his studio. Do you have a quota that you give yourself on how many projects you want to do in any given year, or what's your the amount of workload that you try to carry?
It's as much and as many as I can. Mm-hmm. I paint for a couple of galleries around the country, and I've got a few original shows that I go to, and they all require a certain amount of work. And then also depends on how many projects I take in from private individuals. So I would say I'm probably around, and it's also depends on size. Mm-hmm. The smaller they are, the faster they go. But and it's kind of a mix of sizes. I would say I'm around 40 to 50 paintings a year, I suppose.
Someone that doesn't know you, if they would go into a gallery and there were 20 different artists' work on the wall, could they look at a Scott Storm piece of art and say, that's Scott Storm? Do you have kind of a trademark signature style to your painting that, you know, you hear, you know, Terry Redlin was the light, you know, we talked about Les Kuba before we talked, you know, and his use of the number 13 in all his works. Does Scott Storm have something like that?
Well, I've been told that I have a distinctive style. I guess I just try to paint, you know, and get things as real as I can. But I've been told people that collect my work, they can, for instance, in the Federal Duck Stamp, I'll back up a little bit, that's held every year. People will email me or send me messages or call and say, is your painting number such and such? Because they're not supposed to put the names on before they judge. So, and
so
a lot of times...
bias on...
Right. But I think people do have styles. You know, it's... But I can't pick up my own style, to be perfectly honest. But I've been told I do. So,
okay. You know, when we started our visit here, you mentioned your beginning into art when you were as an architect. And the 1987 Minnesota Duck Stamp Competition, your first real foray into art competitions, you placed second there. That had to be a tremendous confirmation of your own abilities.
Well, I didn't really know what it meant at the time. I mean, I knew I was going into this knowing that growing up a hunter, knowing I needed to have a duck stamp in order to hunt, and didn't really know mm-hmm. how the duck stamp got there. And it was actually my roommate's girlfriend that did some painting herself suggested that I enter. And at that time, Minnesota, and it still is, it was loaded with national artists. And I think... when I placed second that year, I come to find out after the fact, when I realize who's who, there was 11 federal duck stamp winners in that one, and including the Hauptmann brothers, which are the most successful artists in that. So, I mean, that it didn't hit me at the time, other than I was very proud I took second, but I didn't really know who I took second against. So as time went on, I learned to appreciate that even more.
Yeah, my next question was, in the duck stamp scene, one of the big names is the Hauptmann brothers. They're Minnesota guys. I think they're the only brothers that have won the federal. But when you're entering, do you consider yourself competitors or your colleagues, peers, or you know, is it a kind of a cutthroat type of competition?
Well, it's everybody wants to win. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in it. And I'm very competitive. It's kind of taken the place of my sports career from high school and college. But I know the Hauptmann brothers really well. In fact, I'm doing kind of a project right now with Bob Hauptmann. And, you know, we're friends. It's a funny business in that.
Yeah,
we're competitors, and we all want to win. But, you know, it's the artwork that we want to win with. It's not, you know, it's not a personality thing, or it's not a grudge against a certain person. If that answers your question.
Yeah, it really does. The 1987 Minnesota Duck Stamp winner was the Common Goldeneye. What was your entry?
It was a flock of bluebills.
Okay.
So, and I kind of, we talked about Les Kuba when you first got here, and it was kind of, he was the most famous and inspirational artist that I knew at the time. So I kind of did it in his style. That's what I was studying at the time. But it's far cry from the style that I've come to at this point, yeah.
We're on a roll here because my next question is, who inspires you as an artist? You know, do you see other pieces of work from your peers and you know, look at techniques and say, you know, I wonder if I could adapt that to my style, or are you just, you know, who inspires Scott Storm?
Well, there's a whole gamut of artists that do. In the, I would say David Moss is probably one of my biggest heroes. The Hauptmann boys for sure. Dan Smith, who used to be from Minnesota, lives in Montana now. I took a couple workshops with him and became friends. And I think we all look at each other's work and say, you know, that's really cool how you did that. How, you know, so we kind of pick it apart, pick each other's brains. And I can't say that we tell each other all our secrets,
right.
But it's,
right.
You know, when you do something in your style, it helps each other. So.
Okay, so you were runner-up in the 1987 Minnesota Duck Stamp Contest. You eventually would win the 1991 Indiana Pheasant Habitat Stamp Contest. How big a deal was that to take blue ribbon?
Oh, that was huge. You know, I was working as an intern and as an architect at the time and dabbling in this, and it kind of is just, it's a pat on the back, you know, to say that you're getting someplace and that you're achieving something. So. And then from that point, it was a long time until I won again in 99. We talked about the Hauptmann brothers before. I probably have more seconds and thirds to the Hauptmann brothers than anybody else in the country. But it's always a learning experience, and it's part of the drive, I guess.
In 2004, Scott Storm wins the Federal Duck Stamp Contest held at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. Picture of redheads in flight. Is that the equivalent, basically, to the Super Bowl for wildlife artists?
Oh, there is. There isn't anything bigger. It is a culmination of a lot of hard work. And I tell you what, that was, besides getting married and having my kids, that was definitely the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Looking back on that that federal duck stamp, the picture was a picture of redheads in flight. What made you choose that species, that setting, and what made that the winner, the best, basically best in show?
Well, it was in the federal, they give you a choice of five different types of ducks that you can choose. And I've been going out to North Dakota duck hunting, and I always take my camera and we take photos. And it was just one of those things where I had some photos of some redheads and had a taxidermy mount, and just looking through the photos of the landscape, they just kind of clicked together, and it was just one of those aha moments that it wasn't really set out, because when I go into something like that, I look at as much reference material as I can pull out. For instance, I might have 10,000 photos of redheads, and you go through those species, you go through the other ones that are available, and just kind of see what clicks.
What do judges look for in that high level of competition?
It changes every year. You can only be a federal duck stamp judge once in your life. So it's constantly new ideas that come in. And I think, you know, you look from year to year, sometimes it can be a year or two where they kind of look very similar, but then all of a sudden it's something very different. So I think with the fact that, you know, they've been changing directors too in the program every couple of years, I think that makes a difference. And they may, I'm kind of guessing, they may coach the judges a little bit to see what, okay, what to look at. They also have in the federal duck stamp also, they have a person there that is a specialist in stamps. So they judge it on how well it's going to fit on a stamp, mm-hmm, when they shrink it down to that size. They have a guy that's there specifically to look at the anatomy and coach the judges on, mm-hmm, what might have too many feathers or not enough or right colors or, yeah, so.
Well, here we are in 2015, and this year alone you've been awarded the Ducks Unlimited Conservation Stamp Print winner, the Minnesota Migratory Waterfall Stamp winner, and the Ken Greenwood Memorial Waterfall Award at the NatureWorks Western and Wildlife Art Show in Tulsa. Who was Ken Greenwood? Is that what was that award about?
Well, the NatureWorks show is a big national show for about 50 artists that you have to be juried into that show. And Ken Greenwood was one of the original promoters of it. And he was big into conservation, specifically into waterfall and wetlands conservation, big in Ducks Unlimited. And he was a promoter in the area, probably the biggest in the Southwest, radio, TV. Mm-hmm. And so he had passed away of cancer. And that was one of the ways the rest of the directors could kind of commemorate and show their appreciation towards the Greenwood family.
What's your next contest?
Oh, boy. You're going to make me think today a little bit. Next contest is probably the North Carolina duck stamp. That one is, I've got to have painted and submitted towards the end of January, I believe.
Okay. Well, let's talk about entering a contest and the submission process. What all entails that?
Well, it's contests. It depends on the contest, but they're usually the rules and regulations come out well in advance, sometimes a year in advance. So you have to actually get a painting done and submit it to them. And most contests have specific species that they're looking for. For instance, I just mentioned in North Carolina, they actually want a backdrop from North Carolina, something that's recognizable, mm-hmm, if you can, with that species, and that species has to be able to use that type of habitat, and they have specialists that look at that.
Out of place, yeah.
So it's kind of like the federal duck stamp, where you kind of mock everything up and go through a selection process. There's several contests that I'll put. I think the most I've ever put together is for a federal duck stamp. It was 24 designs.
Okay.
And then I bring everybody in, family, I'll send it to friends and see what their choices are, because it's, you look at things for a long time and you kind of become blind. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So
I was doing some reading, and one of the things that caught my eye, you painted a picture of a Harlequin duck in Minnesota, and I think on the site it said they're relatively rare in the state of Minnesota. How did you put those two together?
Right. That was a species Minnesota. They just have one subspecies that you're supposed to paint. So they pick it, and I think they're trying to get everything that can fly through Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And Harlequin is basically an ocean duck. You find them in wild streams in Montana and Wyoming as a kind of their breeding area, but they always go back to the ocean. People have Harlequin, mm-hmm, I think maybe one or two in the total history, but that's how
never
it comes
say
about.
Never.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. All right. Now, along with winning the prestige of winning the Federal Duck Stamp Award, there are monetary considerations as well. A large market of stamp collectors, print collectors, when those stamps are released, they're tremendously popular.
Oh, they are. There's more stamp collectors than there are, you know, for instance, hunters needed for their licenses. But and they found that out a few years ago when they went from the regular postage type stamp to the electronic, and they started losing a lot of collectors. Well, you wonder why the income fell at that, mm-hmm, point. And, mm-hmm, and now they're kind of going back up in quality, even though that is still that electronic type printout that you're getting.
On the business aspect, how do you determine, or I would imagine you have ultimate control on number of prints of an original that are made available?
For the most part, there are certain groups, when you work with conservation groups, they want to have a certain size edition, which is fine. But yeah, as far as the stuff that's not revolving around stamp competitions or conservation, then I have a control over that. And I'm trying to keep the numbers down. You know, it used to be in the heyday of wildlife art back in the late 80s and 90s, they would print out 60,000 limited edition. Well, in my mind, that's not a limited edition anymore. But now we're trying to keep the numbers down, do a little bit better quality with the canvas prints. It's a fantastic technique over the paper prints. So much more vivid colors. I'm usually really no higher than 500. A lot of times we're trying to keep it around 100, keep it more collectible.
Okay. What happens to the originals? You hang on to them? I would imagine if sold, those originals command a premium price.
Yeah, we sell. My wife every once in a while sneaks out in the studio and she'll pull one in and keep it in the house that she likes. You know, if I paint something, I do a lot of hunting scenes for Pheasants Forever in the last few years. But I use my kids as the models, and anytime my kids are used as the model, she pulls those in the house. But you know, there was a time when I first started out, I would keep the originals. Now, you know, sell them all. Yeah. So, and then, like I said, I've got some galleries around the country that are always asking for them.
So you send, for the print process, you send the original off to the printer, then they send you an artist's proof, you okay it, or thumbs down, or whatever. What happens from there?
Well, the originals, I actually have the systems here. I can scan them. It's either like a flatbed scanner or photographic. Yeah, it turned into digital. And then we also print here. I've got the print system here. And if we're doing lower numbers, I can do them here. If not, we send them out to, I work with the art agency of Wild Wings, and they'll do the whole process there for me. And with the conservation groups, they have their own printers too. So,
you know, it's not only the prints and the stamps, but I mean, you look at mugs. I mean, there's so many different ways, mouse pads, different ways to display your work now.
Yeah, we've done a lot of products from blankets to everything, even toilet seats, which I don't know how they've gone over. I haven't really paid attention, but haven't done toilet paper yet. But that's a big market also. And, we're dabbling in that a lot these days.
How do individuals approach you to commission you for a specific piece?
Oh, it's a full gamut of that, too. I've got just people that are familiar with my work with Ducks Unlimited, majority of my work. I've had quite a few people just call me up out of the blue that have seen my images on the internet. Or in fact, this last year I had a gentleman that I met at a show 10 years ago, hadn't seen him since, remembered him. But he called up out of the blue and said he's ready for a pheasant piece. So that's mainly how.
You don't limit yourself, as you mentioned, to tigers or to waterfowl game birds, but you mentioned tigers, butterflies. Is there a favorite subject matter away from the birds, maybe, so to speak?
Well, it's kind of what strikes me, you know, and a picture I see. I'm very interested in how, say, sunlight and shadow work on a subject. So if I see something that's really kind of neat as far as contrast, very colorful or not, something might be kind of moody where it's very foggy or rainy. It just depends on what strikes you at that time.
I also saw on your site one of the really unique things was the elephant ear painting. Tell us about how that came to be.
Oh boy, that was an experience. I'm not sure if I'll ever do another one, but a client in Hollingford here is a big safari hunter, and he had
not a dentist, is he?
No, not a dentist. No, but he had been talking with me for several years, and I've never been to Africa. I would love to get over there just on a photographic safari would be, I think, the ultimate. But he was telling me how on the problems with getting, you know, hides and things back. And I think the ear took about 2 years to get back here, and it was at a taxidermist shop. He mounted used the leather and kind of stretched it over a fiberglass form, and then urethaned it, and then I let it sit for over a year here on the counter. And it's a big piece. It's 5 feet tall by about 4 feet wide. And just let that urethane kind of soak in and cure out. And the texture is like a very coarse sandpaper. So I went through, I think, four brushes on that one. And mm-hmm. I never go through brushes. I mean, I can use a brush for a long, long time on a lot of paintings. But it's there's so much hair and...
just weird texture.
Just different textures on there that,
creases
but it,
and,
yeah. And in the long run, I did a, right in the middle of the ear, I did a kind of a partial portrait of a charging elephant, and I misted everything out. The premise is that they kick up dust when they get sure. angry. And, mm-hmm. and so that kind of helped with not having to do a whole lot of detail. But in the long run, it did help the texture of the elephant itself because it kind of lend itself to
sure.
that,
the canvas became
that
the elephant. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, but it was difficult. I tell you what, it's was interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's good to be challenged in things. Speaking of challenges, is it difficult to incorporate human subjects into paintings? The human form certainly presents its own form of challenges to artists.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't to me. I've done a few of them. I don't know if this makes sense or not, but how I describe it is when I'm painting. People ask me, well, how do you get the water to look like water? How do you get it to look wet? But I don't approach things as painting that image. I'm not painting water. I'm not painting a duckbill. I'm not painting snow. I'm painting texture. And it's when all that texture comes together, that's when it turns into something. So whether it's a human, whether it's a duck, whether it's a droplet of water, it all is kind of approached the same way.
Yeah, your work with the characteristics of water is something that just amazes me as I look at your work. The reflections, the ripples, the way the water reacts as a duck swims through. I mean, to me, that's the thing as much as anything that I enjoy that I think you've just captured to a T.
Well, thanks. That's kind of how I got started painting ducks. I enjoyed the work of Ron Van Gilder, and he was known as the water artist at that time, and which he doesn't like that title, but he did such a fantastic job on it. And it's really kind of an abstract when you're painting water. And like I say, you don't approach it as painting water. You're painting patterns. And I like challenging myself with that. One of my paintings that I painted maybe 3 years ago was a grizzly bear running through the water chasing a salmon called Salmon Run. And it was just full of water splashes. And it didn't take me any longer than any other painting. It was just another, I guess, something to push myself on. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I just got back yesterday. I was up on the North Shore taking photographs of waterfalls. I want to challenge myself with not only the texture of the rock, but the splashing of the water and do something that looks very complex, but hopefully it won't be.
Is there a dream subject for Scott Storm? I mean, a bird or animal that you have yet to attempt to capture on canvas?
Oh, that's something I haven't thought about. I guess I like capturing something a little bit different that nobody else has quite yet. I mean, yeah, people. I'd be happy doing that with ducks. I'd be happy doing that with deer, whatever it is. But just to, again, I think it's just in how you do it, how is it composed, or how is it lit, or, you know, those sorts of things. I'm constantly challenging myself. I've never been fully happy with the painting I've done. When I get done and look back on it maybe a couple weeks down the road, I always see something that I would have done differently. So,
now, you mentioned that you're a hunter as well. Is there ever a conflict of emotions when you're out, say you're hunting, and you see Canadian geese coming into a set of decoys or a buck underneath a deer stand? Is there ever a conflict between artist and hunter?
Oh, never. Oh. The only conflict is that I don't have two right hands and two right eyes that I can take the photo and make a shot with at the same time. So, no, I never even thought about it that way.
Okay. We talked a little bit about some of the conservation programs that you're involved with, and the print sales and wildlife art, what a tremendous amount they do for those conservation efforts. Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, the Nature Conservancy, I think, did I see the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service sponsor that national that you won in 04? It's got to be pretty gratifying knowing that your work helps generate the funds, basically, to help support those conservation efforts.
Oh, it is, because we, you know, the population of the human is such that a lot of our wildlife can't make it on our own. I mean, we have to be
the stewards
of nature, whether we want to be or not, in order for things to continue to exist, and for our children to enjoy walking through a grass field, being able to hunt pheasants, or you know, that sort of thing. We all have to be responsible and do our part.
When I look at a painting, obviously you look at the focus point of the subject, but what I really appreciate, and I've noticed in your paintings as well, attention to detail in little things in the entire painting, you know, the moss on a tree branch, the curl of a leaf, you know, a turtle sunning itself on a log, the way the sun breaks through a cloud pattern. I mean, that's the attention to detail is just amazing.
Well, thanks. I appreciate hearing that. It's always fun doing something a little bit different and try to capture that. You know, I don't claim that I'm always successful, but I always try to be, and that's the challenge, to get to that point where somebody will appreciate it.
Perspective is another interesting aspect of artwork. Not everything is seen through the artist's eyes. I enjoy seeing, you know, what does it look like from a bird's eye point of view, or what does it look like, you know, from whatever, maybe the animal's point of view himself.
Mm-hmm. That's trying to do something a little bit different, mm-hmm. trying to understand it's part of the study of the animal, just to give somebody a different clue. You know, for instance, you know, I did some things from laying on the ground, which normal people don't do, but from the goose hunter's perspective, mm-hmm. you know, it's a little bit different than standing up and watching a bird come in. I mean, they're right on top of you, and it's a neat angle.
Speaking with Scott Storm, wildlife artist here, do you foresee the use of technology, say like a camera mounted on a drone, aiding something in your line of work now?
You know, we've actually been talking about it. My son and I, he's a pole vaulter for Holing Ford, and last year his coach had a drone, and just to get a different angle mm-hmm. on how to study how
technique.
He goes over. Yeah. He was trying to get a drone set up so that you could see that. And I definitely could see using a drone for that. We were just talking about, say, the bird's eye view. Mm-hmm. You know, what's it look like from up there, or, you know, flying with those birds. I think that would be
a spectacular,
very neat way to go,
yeah.
At least to try it.
Have you ever tackled fish as a subject? You know, the trout and walleye stamps are big, too.
I haven't. I grew up fishing. I grew up in Walker, Minnesota, on Leech Lake, and my dad was a fishing guide in the summertime. He was a teacher and coach the rest of the time. But it's I've always, even though I've been around it, I've never had that inkling yet. Okay. Not to say that I won't,
right.
But there's too many other things above water where I don't have to stick my head to do yet.
You said you'd mentioned prior that you're never really totally satisfied with a finished work. You know, when you make what you consider a mistake in a painting, how do you fix that, or, you know, how do you work around that?
Well, nice thing about paints is you can just cover it up. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm working on a piece right now for a client up in Alaska. I'm doing some ocean ducks with him out in a boat, and it's a composition of probably a dozen different photos, and when you blend those things, you don't always get that perspective to work out, or you don't always get the light to work out. So you just take paint and plop it over the top of your mistakes,
right. Yeah.
and start over again. But a lot of times I've got a lot of that. I do use the computer quite a bit to compose photos, and I'll meld those together with Photoshop, and so I get a lot of the color, get a lot of the proportion worked out there. Not all the time, but it's a big help. So when I do sit down and paint, most of the stuff is worked out already. Yeah, and I don't run into having to. Yeah, I'm not saying they're all perfect. Mm-hmm. I might put that painting away and not use it because it's just not clicking when it's done. But it sure is a big help to get to that point.
I know you hear got people that are writing a book, you know, they'll start it and they'll just hit like writer's block and they'll put it away for a year or whatever, maybe come back to it. Has that ever happened to you where, you know, I'm just not feeling this painting right now, I'll come back, put it away, come back to it later, start a different project?
I haven't for many, many years. When I started, there was a couple that I just put away, and not that they weren't working out. I just got on to other other subjects. Now, most of my stuff have deadlines, so I don't have the luxury of putting them away.
Right.
I have to finish them and get them out the door.
As an artist, now you mentioned earlier, you're self-taught. Could you teach a person like me to paint? Do you feel that everyone has some inherent artistic ability?
You know, I don't know. I think to a certain degree, everybody does. But I mean, everybody's got talents and different ends. I was lucky enough that a lot of this stuff came natural for me. I'm able to look at something and
transfer, you know, it,
yeah, break it apart and put it in parts and pieces and do that. So, but it's not to say that some of it can't be taught. You know, I've never done that for anybody. I think my wife and I have talked about maybe putting on some classes, but we'll see what the future brings with that. But I think a lot of what we all have is naturally within us to start with. Yeah.
Is painting a stressful or peaceful process for Scott Storm?
Yes, they both can be, and I say the actual painting is not stressful. The timelines are the ones that are stressful. When I really have to get something done, or I know there's a few more projects that I got to get cranked out the door, that's where the stress comes in.
Do you have a personal favorite, all-time favorite? Like, this is the best thing I've ever done?
No, I've got favorites because they mean something to me. For instance, a story, I'll bring it back into the mid-90s, 97, I had my dog, Kane, a yellow lab. We took a family hunting trip out to North Dakota, and he was only a 7.5-year-old dog, and he passed away from apparent stroke. We were out in the middle of nowhere, so we never really found out, but he was the type of dog that almost could read your mind. I mean, we just clicked together and just a fantastic buddy. And before we went out there, I finished up a painting. It actually was my first printed piece with a company down in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And the publisher actually bought the original from me. And I was just heartbroken. I was calling my wife up and telling her this whole story of how everything happened. And by the time I got home, she had made arrangements to buy the original back, and we still have it in my house now. And it's not because it's the perfect painting, because it isn't, but it has the memories. So I do a lot of paintings like that mean something to me. You know, it's an experience.
One of the things in what I do is covering area high school sporting events is get there and I'll walk the hallways, and a lot of times you'll see students' artwork displayed on the walls of, you know, on the lockers or whatever. There's some tremendous young youth artistic talent in our schools. But in today's, it seems, educational climate, arts are being less and less stressed or emphasis put on them. Have you ever been approached to speak to high school art classes and just kind of develop the feel for arts?
Well, I've been asked, and I have taken part in a few of those, but it is hard, you know. Mm-hmm. With you kind of have to speak in, you know, broad scope, mm-hmm. and for me that's very hard too, because what I deal with takes so much time. It's you know, kids and adults alike are curious on how I do things, but you've heard the expression "watching paint dry." Well, that's really what it is. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, if you have about 3 weeks of time, I can show you how to paint a duck. But
right.
But you know, you do what you can to try to get it. It's because I do coach sports too, and it's, you have to get the kids, no matter what it is, interested. You know, you have to keep things fun and not turn it into a job. If you can do that, no matter what it is, the kids will be excited about it.
Finally, in general terms, can you give us an idea of current projects that you've got going on right now? I know probably there are some privacy issues involved, but obviously you know, you've got a lot of irons in the fire. You know, is it one project at a time? Do you work on multiple projects at a time?
The design phase, I can do a whole bunch at the same time. Once I start painting, it's just that one until it's done. There's very, very few times where I've had to put it aside because another deadline has crept up. But you can ask my wife. I'm too focused sometimes. When I start on something, I don't see anything else that happens around me until it's completed.
Finally, Scott, to give the folks an idea how they can view some of your artwork and maybe take a look and maybe make a purchase, you've got a presence online.
Yeah, our website, a personal website, is stormwildlifeart.com. We try to keep that as current as possible. Also, wildwings.com, they're my publisher / agent, and they keep and everything of, you know, from paintings to cups, blankets, that sort of thing is online there.
All right, that's wildlife artist Scott Storm joining me here discussing the world of wildlife art. And we thank him for his time on You Are There, Sports Scott. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
That was wildlife artist Scott Storm. You can see examples of his work on his website at stormwildlifeart.com. Thanks for listening.